Black Ops Compliance Techniques. The next set of techniques that I'm going to share with you is centered on the idea of agreement or compliance. Normally, people agree or comply if the speaker is talking about something they already know or believe in. Often, people agree if you are able to give them some compelling proof that what you are saying is true. But sometimes, even this doesn't work, and so we turn to hypnotic techniques to get people to say yes. Again, you won't be able to convince another person to do strange or dangerous things like run around with a gun in their hand unless the subject is mentally imbalanced and has a tendency to perform unstable or dangerous things. Hypnotic compliance techniques are a little different from the compliance methods we use in non-hypnotic situations. For one, you will not be appealing to the rational or analytical mind of your subject. That is usually not very effective because the mental filters that people have are often very selective about what can be deemed as acceptable or true. So instead of attempting to jive with those mental filters, we are going to bypass them so your input can be implanted directly into the subject's subconscious mind. We have already explored the essential differences between the conscious and subconscious halves of the human mind in a previous section. Feel free to review that section first if you feel the need to do so. Basically, what you need to do to gain immediate compliance is to give the subject information in such a way that your input will not be scrutinized too much by the critical factor or the analytical side of the mind. Because once the critical factor kicks in, you will have to deal with internal resistance or objections. Objections are a normal part of any interaction, but if you can do something to reduce them, why not do it? Now, there are many types of feedback that a subject can give you during an interaction. So why focus on agreement? Truth be told, the conscious half of the mind is always on the alert. It is so alert that sometimes it forms unnecessary objections to what people say because that's its main role. It is there to protect the vulnerable subconscious mind from potentially dangerous ideas. If your subject begins to agree or comply with all of your input, your subject's conscious mind becomes relaxed and complacent. That's what we want to happen. We don't want your subject's conscious mind to be on the alert and analytical all the time. We want it to be relaxed at all times so it won't form so many objections. So how can you ensure that your input will be met by agreement by your subject at all times? There are four main techniques that you have to remember. Technique number one. In an early section of this book, I shared with you one of the key methods of sharing ideas to people, plausibility. We're going to expand our discussion of plausibility in this section because it is also one of the biggest factors that affect the likelihood of agreement during conversations. Now, you have to remember that you can only experiment with this technique when you have already established a degree of rapport with your subject. That means you have to build rapport first before you start suggesting ideas with varying levels of plausibility. Think of plausibility on a scale of 1 to 10. Now, at any moment, you can move the pointer to 1, 2, 5, and so on. However, with each movement, you also run the risk of changing the passive or subconscious feedback of your subject. So in general, the safest way to go about things is to stick to statements that are at least mildly plausible so that you do not alert the mental filters of your subject. Your subject would still agree with you to maintain the flow of the interaction. This applies most especially to situations where it is difficult to place the subject in trance. I have already discussed the various signs of trance. You will be able to apply that information right now. The plausibility of your statements should match your subject's trance level. If your subject is in a very deep, almost sleep-like trance, you can begin expressing ideas and statements that have almost no plausibility. As long as your statements do not contradict your subject's ethics and morality, you are going to be fine. If you need to convince someone to believe in something that is completely radical and new, you need to prime your subject through repetition and other hypnotic techniques. When the subject has already been primed, that is the time that you can begin expressing your new ideas. Until that point is reached, however, hold off on any radical ideas, as these can be rejected immediately by the subject's conscious filters. Technique number two. The second compliance technique is the agreement routine. The agreement routine is centered on the idea that the hypnotist has to believe what he is saying first before he can effectively pull the subject into the mental experience. So this technique concerns you more than it concerns your subject. Many hypnotists create brilliant mental experiences, but at the end of the day, they don't have full conviction and belief in these experiences themselves. Hypnosis is most effective when it is a shared experience, and this just won't take place if you cannot properly express yourself to your subject. In addition to really feeling and expressing what you are thinking at the moment, you also have to agree with your subject the moment you see him. This vital connection can be made silently within your mind. Once the mental connection has been created, everything will flow smoothly. Now, many people ask me about what to do when the subject begins responding with things that deviate from what you think is correct and agreeable. What can a hypnotist do then? Of course, disagreeing and contradicting your subject can cause severe repercussions throughout your conversations. Sometimes the subject is reasonable and accepts the criticism with a grain of salt and he moves on. But often the subject goes into debate mode and starts fighting the speaker vehemently. When this happens, rapport is instantly broken and you will have to repeat the process. That is, rapport, inducing a trance, reading the trance signs, introducing different ideas, etc. So the best approach for this type of problem would be positive reinforcement. Positive reinforcement is defined as a method of rewarding desirable behavior. It is used in many disciplines and specialty fields in psychology, and we are bringing it into the discussion because it works so well in avoiding the trap of directly disagreeing with other people. In the context of conversational hypnosis, positive reinforcement is really easy to do. Here's an example. Let us say that you were talking to a friend about your favorite sport. You ask him to describe your sport, and he comes up with a list of 6 things. It is exciting. It fosters group unity. It is engaging from start to finish. It increases risk of physical injuries. It is too rough. It is not the best sport for kids. This list has 3 positive elements and 3 negative ones, right? Normally, people would say, "No, you're wrong," and then they would proceed to enumerate why the other person was wrong. This is not positive reinforcement. Positive reinforcement is a form of operant conditioning. It is a method of changing another person's behavior to conform to a behavioral model that you have in mind. Of course, you won't be telling your subject that you are trying to change how he thinks about certain things. That won't be necessary at all. Here's why. When you hear something that is agreeable, you will be rewarding the subject with positive feedback. You will nod your head, say yes, or even smile when he says something that you agree with. However, when your subject starts saying things that you do not find agreeable, you will not do anything at all. Strange? Not really, because we are conditioning the subject to distinguish between things that are agreeable and which aren't really that acceptable or desirable. Deep in the subject's subconscious mind, the desire for rewards will manifest. The subject will crave for the positive feedback that you give whenever he says something that you like. So as the conversation progresses, the subject will slowly shift his ideas and expressions so that he would only say things that produce a reward, which is your positive feedback. Technique number 3. The third compliance technique is the yes set. The yes set is so useful that it can be appropriated for so many situations. And yes, we are using it again here because it obviously can be used to gain compliance from people. Many hypnotists like to think of the yes set as a ladder of sorts, and this ladder can be expanded to reach greater and greater heights, until finally the hypnotist is able to reach his goal. As the agreement ladder grows in height, the hypnotist becomes bolder and more adventurous with his input, until finally he gets the behavioral change or outcome that he wants to take place. How can you create an effective yes set when conversing with other people? Here are some of the best tips that I can give you. Tip number 1. My first tip for you is to listen really closely to what the subject is saying so you can repeat their ideas and words. Repetition is the cornerstone of rapport, and consequently, agreement after rapport has been established. Why is it the cornerstone of agreement? Well, think about it. If you repeat what the subject has just told you, your subject won't be able to object to your input, right? For example, if you say, "So, you've just come into town and you are looking for a rewarding job with an auditing company," your subject can't refute that because he just said it himself. The principle of consistency kicks in immediately, and the subject is forced to live up to what he has just said, no matter how zany or incorrect it is. If the subject has just told a lie, he will either have to live up to the lie, which is extremely difficult at times, or he will suddenly admit the truth. Either way, you are going to win, because you will either gain compliance at the beginning of the conversation, or you are going to learn a vital truth about the person that you are talking to. Of course, you don't have to repeat everything mindlessly, like you were some circus parrot. Whenever you repeat what your subject is saying, there has to be purpose, too. For example, if you are selling a product to someone, and he mentions something about his problems in his business, you can respond with something like, "You mentioned that your business is floundering because you cannot keep track of sales properly, and you also think that your staffs are not being truthful about the day's sales whenever you make your computations. Well, my product can be integrated into any business system and will keep track of your sales 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All data is securely stored in the cloud, and you will never have to worry about losing your precious database ever again." Take note of the first part of the monologue. That is what the subject told me, the speaker, about his business. I just repeated it for him. He can't object to it, and since he is a reasonable and logical person, he agrees with the first part of my statement. And then I follow it up with the second part, which is a hard pitch for the product I am selling. The customer is thrown into a slippery slide, and he can't stop the flow of ideas, because he has already agreed with the first part of my monologue. Tip number two. The second tip that I would like to share with you is say things that are obvious and can be verified easily by the subject. This step really clinches the deal for the hypnotist, because if you keep saying things that are obvious, the subject will definitely agree with you continuously to the point that he would feel that you will always say what is factual and agreeable. Just make sure that the statements you use are within the context of your conversation. If you can make specific observations that harmonize with what you are talking about at that exact moment, use those observations. Avoid random verifiable facts like, "The sun is really hot today," especially when you are in the heat of conversation and you are so close to making the big offer to your subject. Tip number three. My third tip for building an effective yes set is to use targeted truisms. A truism is defined as an undoubted or self-evident truth. Truisms are statements or phrases that tend to be accepted by everyone with a common culture. There are common truisms that are rooted in local culture. These are sayings like, "You can't win them all," and "Birds of a feather flock together." And then we have truisms that are field-specific. These are truisms that only make sense within the context of specific human endeavors. For example, entrepreneurs will often talk about profit and repeat business. These truisms might not matter a lot to someone who is very passionate about baseball. So in order to make a good impact on your subject, you need to make sure that your truisms will make sense to your subject, first and foremost. If it doesn't make sense, the yes set won't work because he won't agree with what you are saying in the first place. Tip number four. My fourth and final tip for creating the perfect agreement ladder is to piggyback your hypnotic suggestions. Piggybacking is a relatively simple concept that involves attaching suggestions or instructions to something that people can readily accept. Your hypnotic suggestion will be carried by the preceding statement so that it won't be cut off or rejected by the subject's mental filters. So instead of just giving your hypnotic suggestion separately, you're going to link it to a linguistic form that can bypass your subject's conscious mind. Here's an example. "You look very gorgeous today in your red dress. Why don't we go out for dinner later?" The first part of the statement is a mix of observation and a compliment, while the second part is a request that is completely unrelated to the first part of the statement. But because the second segment had piggybacked on the first segment, it gained legitimacy. It became a valid part of the statement. Group control and influence. Social psychology has known for many years that people operate with a kind of group mentality that makes people's tendencies constant and to a certain degree predictable. While it is true that every person has unique drives and needs, this does not mean a person's thinking patterns are extremely unique from the recognized thinking patterns of the majority. What does this mean? As a conversational hypnotist, you are in prime position to learn these patterns of thought so you can predict, also to a certain degree, how your subjects will think and behave in certain situations. If you want a good example as to how mass or group control works, take a look at the grandiose assemblies held by politicians during election. Every element on stage, every gesture, and every word that the would-be politicians speak were fine-tuned to please the masses and gain support. We celebrate these grandiose assemblies as ideal manifestations of liberty and suffrage. In reality, these assemblies are hardwired to influence people through grand gestures, verbal or otherwise. Have you ever thought why would-be politicians always require a big audience when they come on stage to speak? The reason for this peculiar requirement is quite simple. People think differently when they, consciously or unconsciously, become part of a group. A person's mentality as an individual changes when he becomes part of a group. The dynamics of communication also change. When a person becomes part of a group, he begins to think along with the group. Unwittingly, he watches out for others as well as himself. This is just one example of how group mentality changes a person's priorities and thought patterns. So how can you influence people when they band together to form a group? Here are some basic guidelines that you should always remember when dealing with groups. First, when people are crowded together, even if they didn't want to, a minor bond forms within the new group. This bond can either be weakened or strengthened depending on what the agent, the pack leader, that's you, says to the group. However, before you can influence the newly formed group, its members have to see you as someone they can trust and rely on. Once the pack sees that they can rely on you, you become the pack leader until such time that the group decides that you are no longer a fit leader. 2. Groups of people form on the basis of similarity. There are different levels and forms of similarity, but the important thing here is that in order for a group to work like a group, there must be some commonality binding together its members. For example, people who are waiting for the bus have a singular commonality. They are waiting for the bus to arrive. If, for some reason, these people suddenly find themselves unable to ride public transit, there is a probability that they will band together to find a solution to the problem. Once the problem is solved and the need for the group no longer exists, the group formation will naturally dissolve. 3. The first thing that you should keep in mind if you want to become part of a group is being accepted by the other members. You can't just walk into a group and proclaim yourself as a competent pack leader. You have to be accepted by the group first. How can you facilitate the process of integrating yourself to any group? Just use the basic tools of hypnosis, rapport, matching and mirroring, pacing and leading, etc. Basically, you will just communicate with the group and show that you have their best interests in mind. Saying something is different from showing people something. So if you can demonstrate your ability to bring a form of benefit or advantage to your group, do it. This will definitely speed up the process of acceptance. 4. Do people have a natural tendency to want to become part of a group? Yes, and this is not a cultural thing at all. It is instinctual. It is believed that humans have a natural desire to become part of a group because there is safety in numbers. It is not vanity or pure socializing that we are after when we seek out other people that have similarities to us. We choose to become part of a group because deep down we are aware that this might improve our chances of survival. This instinctual drive might not make much sense in our day and age, but we can't suspend our desire to become part of a pack or group any more than we can suspend our desire to procreate. It is inevitable, and the drive itself will always be there. 5. What do members of a group look for in a potential pack leader? The first thing that people usually look for is a strong sense of authority. Authority isn't always viewed as a bad thing by groups. Sure, people don't like to be told what they should do, but let's face it, without proper leadership, we would be lost as well. So you have to find the right balance between being a leader and being one with the group. Your messages should always benefit the group that you are addressing. That is the single most effective way to gain the trust of people that you don't really know. 6. The principle of hope is extremely important when you are dealing with groups of people. When you are able to integrate hope into the equation, people begin to see you as a potential source of solutions to their problems. It would be helpful to use the principle of hope to fan the flames of influence and persuasion. You can always frame your statements in such a way that people would want what you can actually deliver. To promise something that you simply cannot deliver is clearly wrong, so don't do that. People do not like being deceived. But if you promise something that you can definitely provide and dress up your promise in such a way that a sort of frenzy occurs, you will succeed 100% in what you set out to do in the first place. 7. Once you have established yourself as a leader of a group or pack, you must begin setting group standards. Group standards are measurements of normalcy within the group. For example, if you become a team leader in your department, you must inform your group of the new routines that you want to implement. You must inform the group and gain the support of the majority. This way, the silent few who are secretly resisting your authority will have no choice but to follow suit, because no one wants to be rejected simply because they failed to perform something that everyone has agreed to do. From this angle, you can see clearly how easy it is to influence large groups of people without having to appeal to each member of the group individually. There is no need for that when you are operating under the principles of group control or mass control. You appeal to the group as a unit, not to the individual units that comprise the group. 8. One cannot underestimate the power of human desires when you are dealing with a group of people. The only reason why a group would invest so much effort to follow authority is because it believes wholeheartedly that a benefit will soon emerge from the interaction. And this is the key that has allowed many political leaders to hold sway over an immense number of people. The most powerful political leaders don't just promise random things to the masses. They make very specific promises that correspond to the real needs of their constituency. These promises may never be fulfilled at all, but that won't stop people from pinning their hopes on their leaders. Because in the end, the attraction of something that might possibly come true is too big to pass up. If we apply this principle to conversational hypnosis, you would be able to see easily how you can get someone to do what you want. The first step is to be aware of what the other person needs. If you can't deliver that at all, try to dig deeper. What else does your subject want? The desire for something doesn't have to be grand, but it has to be a genuine desire, something that has been lurking in the subject's heart for the longest time. When you finally find that one desire that you can easily fulfill, you can rest easy knowing that your interaction with your subject will soon bring its rewards. 9. If you want your group to continue trusting your words and actions, you have to be very consistent. When a pack leader is very consistent with what he is doing, the members of the pack or group find it easy to lower their defenses and just go with the program. Consistency lulls people into a sense of complacency. As long as you are ethical about your decisions and what you want to do to your own group, then I find no reason not to recommend this technique to you. Consistency in your words and actions also gives rise to expectations. Expectations are quite amazing in the context of mass control because you can actually influence people even before they have seen what you have to offer. Positive expectations are excellent for people who need to sell something to others in order to thrive. For example, if you sell software online and you have created a great brand for yourself, people will expect excellent software from your brand. The expectations are essentially irrational, but that won't stop people from pinning their hopes on your brand. They will expect that something good will come out of you because you have been consistent with your promises in the past.